Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain on KKZZ. We're live every day at 10 o'clock, or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting subject, no two of which are related. My first guest pioneered an industry around the thesis that the most principled companies are the most profitable and sustainable. We'll discuss his latest book, How. Why How We Do Anything Means Everything. My second guest is an internet entrepreneur, video podcast host, a flash/action script guru, and a computer book author, including books on Apple's Macintosh. We'll discuss the legacy of Steve Jobs leaves behind from his years at the helm of Apple. My third guest is a former Air Force pilot who spent time flying in commercial aviation. He'll take us down the back alleys of aviation from his latest book, from the airline safety, Rogue Aviator. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Steph Seidman, is called by Fortune magazine the hottest advisor on the corporate virtue circuit. He's a CEO, an author, and a thought leader that has pioneered an industry around the idea that the most principled businesses are the most profitable and sustainable. 16 years ago, Dove founded LRN with a powerful vision that the world could be a better place if more people did the right thing. Dove's How philosophy is prominently featured in the 9 rules for companies to embrace in Thomas Friedman's seminal book, The World is Flat. Dove earned a simultaneous bachelor's and master's degree, summa cum laude, in philosophy from UCLA. He then later earned a BA with honors in philosophy, politics, and economics from Oxford University. He graduated from honors from Harvard Law. He and his wife and their son now live in New York City. Welcome to the show, Dove. How are you today?
Good, Billy. Thank you. And I miss living in Los Angeles.
Well, we miss having you here, too. But I understand moving to New York has its advantages, too. So good for you. I want to dive right into it because I was most impressed by the latest edition of your book, How, that President Bill Clinton wrote the foreword for you. So I guess my first question is, how'd you get President Clinton to endorse your book? And what did he read that convinced him to give you an endorsement?
Well, of course, it's both an honor and a privilege for President Bill Clinton to have written a foreword to the book. If you Google President Bill Clinton, you'll see that he says that he is in the how business for the rest of his life, and he's going to leave what to others. As he looks at the world, I mean, and we all see that it's not just interconnected, it's interdependent. And the president has concluded that we now live in a time where we rise and fall together, and that the kind of leadership we need to meet the challenges of this interdependent world is really about the how. And it's really about taking ideas for progress and turning them and inspiring in them the kind of action and collaborative action on a global basis that we need. And the how philosophy is about how we turn ideas into sustainable, enduring action. And it's just remarkable with the Clinton Global Initiative, that the kind of waves President Clinton is making in the world with that idea, that it's about how we turn ideas into enduring principled action.
Well, how is a very global concept, and we'll dive into it in more detail, but I love it in your book that you start out with a very simple or simplistic example of a donut vendor there in New York City who outsells his competition 3-1. And you state the reason that he outsells them is because he allows his customers to make their own change from a tray right there in a stand. Now, how does this donut vendor embrace the ethos of how, and why is it simply not just a case of a single businessman being more productive by allowing people to use and to make their own change right there at his stand?
Well, this donut vendor understands the world he's living in, that what he does is become a commodity. The guy across the street sells an equally fresh donut at the same price, and if not, he could cross the street, buy his donut, and reverse engineer it and make it better the next day. So in a world where what is no longer matters, it just keeps us in the game, the donut vendor understands that it's no longer what we do, but how we do what we do that's the source of his competitive advantage. Giving trust away to his customers is how he created a new, deeper connection with them and a loyalty, because they didn't want this party to end. So if someone in line took more than their fair share of change, they would have said, "Not here, buddy, we like it this way." So he innovated in how he forged a connection with his customers, in this case by saying, "Make your own change." This strategy, by the way, has gone global. The rock band Radiohead now trusts its customers to pay what they think the music is worth, and they made more money in that album than the other albums put together where they put a price on it. In Indonesia, it's a country fighting corruption at pretty large scale. They now have 10,000 honesty cafes where they are teaching their citizens the habits of honesty and probity early in life by allowing them to take food off the shelves and instead of going up to the cashier to put money in a jar and take their fair share of change.
Well, that really does cut to the heart of your book, Dove. In the book, you contend that all behavior is rooted in values, and you also further state in the book that you, just to say it's just business is a non sequitur. Business is always personal. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, you know, I lived in Los Angeles for many years, so I tend to look at society through the lens of movies. And remember the scene in The Godfather when the Tessio character is being carted off for his execution for the attempted murder of Michael Corleone, and he has the temerity to stop and say, "Please tell Michael I always liked him. It's not personal. It's just business."
Right.
Now, if there is a separation between business and life, where we go to funerals and we hear that he was a jerk at work but a loving husband, and he was the toughest negotiator but a caring father, if we can separate business from life, then we should just get ahead any which way. We should become too big to fail. It's actually greed is good as a rational strategy in a world where it's just business. But the more interconnected and interdependent the world gets, we can no longer maintain this separation. And business has become personal because we are in the era of behavior where the behavior of any one person can affect so many others in ways it never has before. I mean, one banker in London can nominally lose $2 billion overnight. He can cost all of his colleagues their bonus and reverberate through financial uncertainty in the marketplace. And one vendor of vegetables in Tunisia can spark an entire revolution towards freedom in the Middle East. That's what I mean. We're in the era of behavior where how we do what we do matters more than ever and in ways it never has before. Now, as you've pointed out, I say we're in the era of behavior, but we all know that behavior comes from values, our deepest convictions of what we think matters. And there are two types of values that guide our behavior. There are situational values, where we do whatever we think the situation allows. And those values make us think in terms of what we can and can't do, and in turn that makes us kind of short-sighted. I'm going to sell you this mortgage even though I shouldn't, and I'm going to buy it even though I can't afford to pay it back because it'll get packaged and sent all the way abroad, and you know, one day we'll figure out that the pension fund in Norway could crash because of that. The other types of values that I think we need to reconnect with are sustainable values, the values that literally sustain human relationships. And these values inspire us to think not in terms of what we can and can't do, but in terms of what we should and should not do in all situations. Values such as truth and integrity and honesty. And I think the more we scale up these values in our businesses and in how we lead others, the more sustainable the value will be that we create.
My guest is Dov Sedman. We're talking about the latest edition of his book, How, Why How We Do Anything Means Everything. And Dov, I know that you say that we're entering into the era of behavior, but hasn't technology moved us in exactly the opposite direction? It's impersonalized things. It's easy for an anonymous person to flame another person online without any consequences, for example.
Well, I think technology has taken our friends and moved them away from us and taken all sorts of acquaintances and strangers and brought them towards us. And frankly, technology has wired us up and connected us faster than we've developed human frameworks to get along and understand each other. I mean, we all work in companies where we send emails to people and we can't tell from technology if it's to a man or woman. And for some people, steak, a cow is steak to be eaten later that night, and to other people it's a sacred being, and we need to be on the same global supply chain and collaborate together. So technology has connected us. And when you're that connected, anything that can happen will happen, and we've democratized the ability to be, frankly, a source for good or a source for harm. And that's why we need to root ourselves in the sustainable values that inspire in us the behaviors that connect and collaborate and allow us to partner with others so that we can create real value and advantage in life.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, Dov. But at the core of what you're talking about, you're saying today our hows are wrong. I mean, we need to ask how at every different encounter when we have people that we should be traveling a journey of significance rather than a quest for success and so forth and so on. How did our hows get so corrupted, and how did that lead us to the current financial situation that we find ourselves in today?
No, well, we were in a just do it era where middle management would tell people, just get it done. I don't care how. I mean, the 80s and 90s, we rewarded a different type of behavior, speed, efficiency, get it done any which way. I mean, don't break the law, don't hire child labor, but other than that, just get it done, I don't care how. And I guess that worked for a time, but I think right now we're paying for those habits because instead of just get it done, we need to switch over to just do it right. And we know, Billy, that what we keep score really tells us what matters. Mm-hmm. And we've learned that you manage what you measure, and we measure how much. How much market share? How much revenue can we squeeze into this quarter? How much profit? At a national level, it's how much debt ceiling? How much stimulus? And we keep doing how much. And what we need to start finding a way to do is to measure how. How do we create trust in our relationships? How effectively do we collaborate? How well do we connect with our customers? And when we start to understand that how is the source of our advantage, we will find ways to measure how, and it's frankly possible, and we've been doing that.
Well, I want to come back and talk about the measurement of how in just a minute, Dov, but I want to continue down this line of reasoning if we can for just a moment, because what you say makes a lot of sense for the Western world, the industrialized world. But if you take a look at the rest of the world, and I'm just going to use world pollution as an example, the most polluted cities per capita aren't cities like New York, Los Angeles, Beijing, or Sao Paulo. They're the smaller cities in countries in China and India where the laws are laxly enforced. Officials are trying to sort of propel their citizens into the middle class. And it's these types of people that are taking shortcuts that are affecting us on a worldwide level. Yet in India and in China, we as members of the United States have very little impact on how they run their business over there. And furthermore, it might be imperialistic to think that we should try to stop them from getting into the middle class. What do you say to that?
Well, I think you can never try to stop a hunger for human elevation and advancement. And I think the world is so interconnected that I think we do rise together. So I think the middle class needs to grow everywhere, and frankly, we need to get back to why our middle class hasn't been growing, and how do we become a country of sustainable innovation, which I think has really been eluding us in the last handful of years. So I think that the more we can demonstrate that those who get their hows right are on a more sustainable path. You know, we live at a time where we don't have a crisis or a boom and bust cycle every 20 years. We're experiencing the lurching from crisis to crisis every 20 days. It could be a tsunami one day and bonds crashing in Greece another and a Gulf oil spill another. We live in such uncertain, volatile times that when everything is changing with more velocity than ever, we need to cling and hang on to the things that we know should never change, which is our values. And values are the only things that do double duty. They simultaneously protect us from lurching from side to side or greed to fear, and simultaneously propel us forward on a path of progress and innovation and allow us to behave in ways that connect with others to our advantage. Now, we always tend to think that behavior is something defensive. We tell a child to behave right after they misbehave, or we talk about good behavior when the parolee got out of prison early for good behavior. My argument is that we need to see behavior as part of offense, that we can outbehave the competition if we start to see our behavior as the source of our excellence and advantage. And that's what the donut guy, I think, struck you with, is that he saw that there's a way in which he could behave that would give him an edge.
I love it. Using our behavior as an offensive weapon. My guest is Dove Sedman. We're talking about his latest book, How. Dove, you mentioned that the hows can be measured, and this is critical to your argument. How does one measure the hows?
So we actually just did an independent study where we statistically corroborated the idea that you can measure how an organization does business. And what we've demonstrated is that the more inspiration you have as opposed to just coercion and motivation through carrots and sticks, the more employees are inspired to pursue significance, truly making a difference in the market as opposed to just pursuing success, even short-term success like quarterly targets. The higher the level of trust you have, the more you get innovation, receptivity to new ideas, customer satisfaction, and employee loyalty, all leading and powerful indicators of financial performance. And the less you get the things you don't want, such as misconduct and retaliation. So we've already proven the idea that how, my argument is that how matters, but you can prove it by showing that the more inspired a workforce, the more it will outperform the competition by outbehaving the competition.
My guest is Dove Sedman, author of the book How. Dove, what do you want people to take away from reading your book, How?
You know, if I had to give you just one basic fundamental idea, we tend to think that how is just a question. How are you? How you've been? How much? How are we going to get from here to there? To me, how is not just a question. How is the answer. And if we start to see how as the answer to how we're going to forge a sustainable path of progress, innovation, and growth in our businesses or in whatever it is we're trying to achieve in our lives, I think we will devote our energy and creativity to the how.
Well, I think it's very worthwhile. This is a thought-provoking book. My guest has been Dove Sedman, author of the book How, Why How We Do Anything Means Everything. Dove, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn about more about your organization, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
We've created a site, www.howistheanswer.com. Howistheanswer.com.
Howistheanswer.com. Dove, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care.